Okay, there we go. Say it's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and we're working our way through the study of the book by E.J. Gold, The Hidden Work. It's a it's an important book. Over the years, and I literally mean that, the last 4 years, I think, we've been studying several of the works that E.J. has produced as part of his overall teaching. And in particular, I'm going to mention The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus, we call it HBM, and also Life in the Labyrinth. And those are referred to as the first two parts of the trilogy. And then the third part of the trilogy was referred to, sometimes was referred to as a series of what I call Bardo cards that were put out. It was some remarkable photography that E.J. did when we built Bardo Town. I say we, 99% of the work was done by Claude and E.J., an enormous effort. But, and each of those had an aphorism that was would key you into the particular space that the card may mention. As I studied The Hidden Work a bit, I started thinking that really The Hidden Work is serving that purpose too, as a the third leg of all of this, and we can look at it that way as well. But in the Human Biological Machine, we learn that there is a machine, in a sense, and that the machine is an electrical body. And we begin to discover the fact that there's another electrical body, two electrical bodies working together, the Human Biological Machine and the Essential Self. And there's an interplay between the two of them. And in that interplay, we get what's called transformation, and there's a specific definition of what that means. As we learn to awaken the machine and keep the machine in its waking state, we start to discover some of what we discovered in the Life in the Labyrinth and how we work through that volume. Now, I call The Hidden Work hardcore, what do you do once you're in the labyrinth? Because this group of students that's here tonight and that's in our studio audience, these are not beginners. Everybody here, we've been down the road a good bit, and we're in the next phase. We're not in the beginner phase. And part of my focus that I have and I want to express is that we're not in beginners anymore. Let's embrace that. Let's grasp the fact that we are in the next level. When you do that, that means that it comes with a bit more responsibility. And I think that the musicians could recognize that too. Once you get to a certain point, you kind of also have the next responsibility to move to the next level. So it's like we gain a little something. And you think, oh good, I'm at the next level. Cool and groovy. No, that's the beginning of the next level. And so it's a continual and quite frankly, an infinite cycle. An infinite cycle. There is never a plateau of completion.
Well, that's what the meaning is of the journey, is the destination.
It is a process. That's right. It's a process, as Ivan is telling us here. So we are in that process. And so I say, let's celebrate. It's not like we're supposed to get somewhere and then we're done. I'm not even going to address the whole thing about, oh, well, you should become enlightened, blah, 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 blah. That's not on the table for discussion. We are in that process. And this chapter 4, we are in chapter 4 now of The Hidden Work. And the summary of chapter 4 was done by Simon and Jim H. And I think they might be both online tonight.
Yeah, I'm here.
And that summary is posted on the website wingsofchaos.com, The Hidden Work. And you can see it there. And it's a troubling chapter. it's a troubling chapter. And let's work our way through part of it. I'm taking the position because I want to kind of, this is going to be a two-week chapter, Ivan. Okay? So let's go ahead and take the time to absorb some of these very meaty concepts that are being offered to us and see where we can go with it. Because we have a big hill to climb here, and when we get to the end of this week's conclusion, we have a serious responsibility to consider. So, on that note, being on the edge of dramatic, or maybe I slipped all the way over.
Right.
Ivan, would you get us started then?
We're bound in return, chapter 4. If our work is successful, it is not into another world to which we will return, but into this world, consciously taking rebirth at the same point in history again and again, using our immortality, life everlasting through eternal recurrence, to perfect this life.
So I read that and I go, gosh, you know, I don't know that's true. You know, it's like, I don't really remember. I don't remember coming back to this life or that. Yeah, okay, I've got these deja vu things.
Right.
So I start from that point of view of a certain level of skepticism, and I say, so what? It doesn't change the principle. Let's just assume for a second that that is the case, that we are coming back in this life that we have right now, Ivan.
Right.
The one that we had, the dinner that we just had together, that
right.
The conversations we're having with Jim, that we're, in fact, doing that a second time, a 50th time, a 1,000th, we don't know. That it's a recurrence that we're in the midst of. And then he uses a strange, taking rebirth at the same point to perfect this life. That means, oh, I know what it means. It means I have to stop doing all those sins, right?
Well, they made a mention in that summary, I noticed, of the Groundhog Day.
So I can continue to do the sins?
No, you're supposed to refine what you're doing. You know, refine your sins.
He's on the hot seat and he's not delivering.
Perfect.
So let's see what the text has for us. And Susan, are you there?
Yes.
Can you aggressively interrupt me, please? When
as often as possible, Sis.
Okay.
When something, I mean, when there's something to be said, that is.
Oh.
I mean, either by you, which is always eloquent, or anybody that has something that we want to share from the log, please.
Yes, I will.
So, jumping ahead, an important lost in contemporary man is the disrupted communication with exalted intelligences in higher dimensions, especially those exalted beings commonly called saints and angels. Although this communication existed uninterrupted for several thousands of years in previous more enlightened civilizations, and first of all, I want to just point out the structure of the chapter. So here he is talking about this bound and return. We're going to come back, eternal recurrence, you know, this idea of perfecting our lives, right?
Right.
Where does it go? What's the second paragraph? The meat of the second paragraph? Oh, what about the communication with angels and exalted beings? Remember that. It doesn't flow logically. But it's an important point as we go on. So, religion literally translated into our language means bound and return. Bound and return. So this is, we're looking at that. And it says, it is meant not only in the sense of being bound to the absolute, which we explored last week when R.C. and Harry led us through that summary, but we have taken upon ourselves an obligation to return over and over again. Do you have an obligation Did you sign that contract, Ivan?
I don't remember signing it, but...
Those lives which were given to us in hospitality. So we did talk last week a lot about the great opportunity we have. We've been given this... we've got this body now, right? And we come into existence. We come into existence, and here we are. And it's like, my gosh, what a set of cards that has been handed to us to do something with. To do something with. Now, granted, many, many people, what they can do is just barely survive. All right? That's neither here nor there. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the individuals who are going to have gone through many years of developing tools of attention and presence and are given the struggles of everyday life, because they're given those struggles because they have a different set of materials, in a sense, to convert them to something. All right? Because everybody, I know a number of the people here personally, and they are given struggles. And Susan is here.
And I am here. And Aria says, my ego denies of such contract, but my essence remembers.
So Aria is saying that her ego doesn't remember it, vast as it is, but her essential self remembers it and feels at home. And she has an enormous ability for that sensing as well.
And still
in return for this hospitality, we have agreed. Okay, go ahead.
Silverdale says, be conscious and mistakes won't happen. Tiandro says, have we already signed that contract? How could we know? The fact we are here suggests yes.
Have we always signed the contract? And Tiandra is just saying really simply, we're here, buddy. Something happened. Okay. And what did Silverdale say again?
Silverdale said, be conscious and mistakes won't happen.
Be conscious and mistakes won't happen. Well, good luck on that one.
Not sure. Maybe that you can be conscious and experience your mistakes more consciously. So what I notice about this whole, you know, certainly the beginning of this chapter, what I really like about it is that it's assuming the point of view that the life we're living here has a purpose, that there's a reason, you know, there's a need for us to be here,
yes.
There's a purpose for us to be here. I mean, the thing about the hospitality, you know, of the opportunity of eternal return, I mean, I believe... My understanding is that everybody is stuck on this wheel, more or less. It's like whether you agree to it or not, whether you're aware of it or not, and so on, this is what's happening. So, but this is very particularly written. This whole book and everything that EJ's teaching is particularly written for those who don't need to be convinced.
Right.
That, you know, that there's a reason for life, or there's a purpose of being here, and so on. And this is the kind of thing that it resonates with me, because I think for most of us it goes back to something in childhood. It's like, you know, all of us can remember somehow just being baffled, you know, by the whole ignorance of everybody around you. You know, this idea that, well, what do you mean we're just going to have lunch and then go play, or, you know.
Well, like I said to my...
Is there more going on here than my bicycle needs the tires filled?
Well, when I was 19 and I come to dinner, to my family dinner, and I was excited about this idea. I heard this idea, know thyself.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I'm so excited. I come to dinner and my father says, what? I know myself. I'm the guy talking to you.
Right.
He was right.
Yeah.
That, in a nutshell, is the relationship I have with my father.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Susan.
I don't have much more at the moment.
Okay.
Is there anything else?
But I do wonder about the difference between recurrence and return. And just the idea of recurring to the same circumstance or recurring just more essentially with different circumstances.
My jury is out on that one too, Susan.
Yeah.
But for me, for right now, my working hypothesis, the element that I am testing is I am in this particular eternal return right now, and what therefore can I do with it? what's before me? What can I do to honor? And I'm going to go ahead just on that point for the next paragraph. In return for this hospitality, we have agreed to perfect the life entrusted to our care. Think about that for a minute. Entrusted to our care. In a sense, we are the guardian angels of our own human biological machine, the houses in which we enjoy life. So we were given the opportunity for physical existence, and we brought along the essential self, and together they formed this duo dynamism, and then if something else happens, as Silverdale will tell us, then a certain triad then begins to occur. So, jumping ahead into the next paragraph, in addition to the great return means that periodically the creation itself is annihilated by return to the absolute, although it is never really destroyed. And then jumping ahead, this makes us immortal whether we wish it or not, unless we have taken the work obligation which produces consciousness. We are immortal in the worst sense of the word, which is to say unconsciously and involuntarily. So we are immortal. We are coming back. That is going to happen, period. And so the offer here is, hey, you want to come back? Do you want to, like, grasp that? You want to grasp that and take responsibility for it? It says, yeah, I'm going to take that responsibility and this thing called a work obligation. Work obligation doesn't mean to, like, oh, I'm going to work real hard for this guy. I'm going to work hard for that guy. No, it's like our own responsibility for this magnificence that has been handed to us. And I wrote down, you know, consider this. It's like, what if you consider it like an art project or a craft project?
Your life.
Yeah. Like, here you are, like, what tone are you going to paint this particular day? You know, what is the material you're going to use when you construct this particular conversation with this person that you just met? What gift do you bring to that event? So at this point, then, we're way off where we've ventured away from the life of the sleeping human biological machine, and we're saying, okay, now we're living a life from creativity. So when I walk into this event with somebody, it's like just imbued with a certain kind of creativity just in itself. And I'm going to meet some people tomorrow, it's actually going to be a really complex business meeting, but it's like I'm almost certain I'm going to find something in that meeting. You know, it's like there's going to be something lying on the table. I'll pick it up, and I'll say, see? I don't know what it is. I'll be prepared in a mundane sort of way. But I just have a sense that, boom, that's if I'm standing in the place called taking the work obligation. In
a
way,
we
can come. Go ahead, Susan.
The question is from Becky Sunnybrook. Would having a memory that survives death help in this?
You know, Becky, would having a memory that survives death help in this? This is something that we've explored a bit here. Like, this is many, 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 many years ago. I'm sitting in the dining room with It was just Claude and EJ at the time, and myself. And he kind of looks at it and he goes, why did you choose not to remember your past? Why did you choose not to remember? That haunted, in a sense, it's haunted me that, you know, I understand that. I can feel that. So the form, Becky, and this is something that I want to give all of us a warning on, the form of that memory may not be a linear form. I went to elementary school at, you know, William Grant Elementary, went to high school at PS 12, whatever the hell it is. That may not be the form of that memory. As Ari is telling us, our essential self remembers. And maybe the canvas is going to look different, but maybe you got to look with different eyes too, right?
Yeah.
And then, you'll see that memory. I mean, so we can become voluntary in our eternal return by accepting the bondage. Now we're going to pause here. By accepting the bondage, and by this acceptance of the inevitable situation, transforming our experience from darkness to light. Now, by accepting the obligation to work in the work. Oh, there it is. There's the answer. All we need to do is that, right?
Yeah, I think actually the real answer to Becky's question is that when you reach the point and you're carrying out your obligation where you need to remember, you will remember. I think that's what will happen. And I'm giving you that on faith. I mean, my opinion about the evidence for this, what he's talking about here, is that when I felt at stress points, you know, at very traumatic or stressful incidents in my life, had an extremely strong sensation that the life could go this way or that way or something, it could be this accident, somebody could die, that there are pathways and that there are other possibilities. And so not exactly the sensation that this life is repeated over and over again, but that there are multiple, you know, the sensation of multiple lives and multiple time tracks and so on, I think that, I feel like I have evidence for that at various points.
Ivan is pointing to an issue here that I think we'll get to later in the book, but I want to emphasize it. That also what happened, Ivan, and I happen to know a little bit about his past, when he has these traumatic experiences,
right.
Then there are choice points. And I'm actually sitting with two individuals who have great burdens that they've gone through. And they made choices. They made choices at that time. And the choice, for instance, one individual I'm thinking about, he said, well, I think I'll give up my cushy suburban life and cross the country into the unknown to a school. Now, why did they do that? That's a kind of a highly skilled set of knowledge. So Becky, you asked the question, do you remember? She remembered. I guarantee you she remembered. Okay? Ivan, exactly the same thing in Tucson when things were pretty dark, right? And he made a choice. And I maintain that those choices are made because of skill sets that these individuals had. And they recall those skill sets. And they said, oh, here's what you do.
That's good. Maybe skill sets, maybe. I'm thinking that it's that you...
It may have taken him 100 passages.
Oh, yeah, well, how about 1,000 or...
It doesn't matter to
what?
Me, 1,000.
Yeah. No, but here's the idea that you're giving me, David, is that you see that this is the person you're talking about is... See, why is that sensation so strong that I'm obligated... You see, to go and find this school, that I had to make this move, that I had to choose this. So there was an irrational way that I needed to go, the outcome unknown and so on and so on.
Sure.
I mean, you know, it seems likely that
how many people?
have made this contract for ourselves.
How many?
You know, it may be the obligation is already sewn up.
21.
See, like I have the obligation, I just don't remember it. I don't remember signing the contract.
We don't remember signing the contract, but there's evidence. This is the point I'm making.
Yeah.
There's evidence that we engaged in the contract, and more than that, that we have been through the experience enough to start learning some rudimentary skill sets to it.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you, there's nothing I can recall doing in this life that trained me to do things that I can do.
Right. Well, that's a good point.
But I'm nevertheless, I'm doing them. So I have to look, and I go, where did I learn that, Becky? How did I remember? So the memory is like Aria is telling us, when she opens up her heart just a little bit more, it's not that you get a cool and groovy feeling. You get two things. You do get some of this grace that starts to come through you. That happens. But the other thing that occurs, it opens you up to more of the knowledge of what you've been through. And guess what? Here's the poison pill on that. It opens you up to more obligation, too.
Yeah.
That's the painful pill there. But we got to move on a little bit.
I do have a comment.
My question, and I'm going to take your comment, but I want everybody to think of my question. How do you accept the obligation? And I mean that for, there's, I think, 21 people online and a couple of people here. How do you accept that obligation? And if you choose to, it's an important exercise to answer that question. There's no answer, okay? You can't go to the index and say, but how does one accept that obligation? How did you accept it? What was the mechanics of how you accepted it? And put that on the website if you want so that others can see, or put it in the log and I'll post that in a few days. Thank you, Susan. Please go ahead. Hang on a second, please, okay?
Okay.
Somebody from the studio audience would like to make a comment. So Jim D is also from the North Country is saying, how do I avoid the obligation? Well, we talked about that at great length in HBM and in Life in the Labyrinth, that we try to escape. We try to hide from our meeting with the beautiful and terrible absolute. Which is we're drawn to, our heart is drawn to it, but at the same time, it's like, I don't want to go to that fire. Great comment. Thank you. Go ahead, Susan.
Becky Sunnybrook said, when you want to or really need to, you will remember. Pressure points.
That's what I've been, that's good. Go ahead.
Yeah, so pressure points maybe.
Good.
To put yourself in the radiation of the being, to know the influences needed in that school. And then Molly said, the school picks you up by the scruff of the neck and brings you home.
The school picks you up by the scruff of the neck and brings you home. Nice.
I didn't get the comment before that.
Nicely put. Go ahead.
That's what I have for now.
Okay, appreciate that. So, it's a worthy exercise. How do you accept the obligation to the work? It's actually a really simple answer. There's nothing super weird about it. But reflect on that. It's worth the effort to do that. It is possible to become immortal within the limits of the cosmos of a lower order than the organic world because the cosmos happens not to be restorial for higher substances, which is to say a depository in which higher substances are blended. But immortality is not the point. we are already immortal in a sense. And jumping ahead in that paragraph, the point really is, until we begin to process the process of perfection of our life, it will continue to be as it always has. Immortality, in the ordinary sense of the word, would become real hell real soon because it's always the same thing. Doesn't that make sense? Until we begin to process the perfection, it will be the same as always. Scary. Huh?
Because nothing in our being would have changed.
The being is eternal. There's an eternality about it. But we interrupt the life as it is, the mechanical life, and suddenly it becomes exciting. We're always, in the media, of course, we're looking for excitement outside us. You know, and you see these beautiful people with a glass of adult beverage, you know, at a casino, and you're winning money. And, and I think about that, and I said, well, what would it be like if I was there right now? If I was in that commercial with those people, I'd like it because I'd get a big paycheck. But if I was at the casino, I'd be drinking a drink and playing the game. It's like, that's what I'd be.
Yeah.
What does that mean? So if we continually look to the outside, we will continue to get further and further and further and farther away from us. And it's, so we have to start, and this is the difference, the magical difference, so simple, is you go inward. You start inwardly, and you begin this process called the process of perfection of our lives. Oh, my God. Fantastic. Okay. Nothing we could relearn in the ordinary course of events will help us, but special work on ourselves in preparation for the work can make it possible to understand and accept these obligations. So we understand, we're all here, we understand what those special, you know, there's always the mystery, the special work on ourselves. Attention and presence. Active attention, active presence, that's the special work. But my gosh, coming to that day in, day out, moment, hour, when you're pissed off, you're tired, you've just gotten home, you close your apartment door, and you lean against it and you go, oh, good. That's when you have to have more attention and presence, too. Oh, gosh. So that's the mechanism. It is possible to understand and accept these obligations. That's such a dynamic phrase, possible to accept these obligations, okay? Time is very precious. It is a pity to waste it in speculation just for the satisfaction of the mental centrum. Because of the necessities of the teacher's work, there's a definite time limit for our work with him to prepare ourselves for the work. Okay. So now we get into the first phase of what was discussed, this next phase of what's beginning to be discussed in the summary. And now comes forth the role of the teacher. If the teacher is obligated now to give us everything necessary for our preparation for the work, and he has seriously taken this obligation upon himself, assuming, of course, he is able to provide us with authentic preparation, then he has made a special suffering for himself. So where's the teacher? I don't see the teacher right now. Is the teacher in that other chair?
Well.
Let's look at this again. If the teacher is obligated to give us everything necessary for our preparation for the work, have you received, has that been provided to us? Everything necessary for our preparation for the work.
I think it's being offered to us.
Only after the completion of the obligation of the teacher toward the work of candidates is it possible for him to pass from this world and to take an entirely new obligation. The law of conservation of energy prevents him from taking a new form till the old one has been completed. For the teacher, the completion of the work for student produces a completely new octave for the teacher's work and provides a solid preparation for cooperative work. There it is. Eventually, the results of students' effort may be useful in the larger work of which the individual can only be a part. Okay? Thoughts? Let's just pause there for a couple of minutes and let me get your thoughts. This is a very esoteric part of this chapter.
Yeah, it is. I would say so.
But we're going to have a very interesting answer in a couple of minutes. But what does it make you feel like when you hear those words? Where, you know, did the teacher do it? Has the teacher provided us everything necessary for preparation for the work, for our work?
So who are we assuming is the teacher? Is it the author? Is it the author?
So Susan's saying, who is the teacher? Is it the author?
Is it the presenter?
The presenter?
Is it the group itself?
Let's edge our way forward, okay?
Yeah.
On this mystery. By law, the organic world must keep a worker in the work alive until completion of the whole task. And then jumping ahead, the teacher must by law transmit everything necessary for work, but is free to present the ideas in such a way that individuals in a group are forced by necessity to share fully and completely with each other those individually received fragments of work methods and intelligence, which might happen to stick in memory with some vagary of chance. In so doing, they are forced to work together cooperatively as a team or fail miserably at any attempt to work. Does that help, Susan?
Yes.
So what is that saying to us here? Are there comments that need to be read? There's a few comments that need to be read. Can you please do that?
Let's see. We have Becky Sunnybrook. She says, yes, very excruciating and not being able to run away any longer.
Maybe speak a little bit closer to the phone, please.
Okay, and I think there was kind of a side talk.
Go get it. At least bring us into it and see if we need to participate.
Well, talking about, Simon's talking about the movie Neo, where he takes the red pill or the blue pill, and basically the choice of whether to return to regular life or whether to wake up.
In the movie The Matrix, yeah.
Yes.
Correct. And when he did, he also assumed more responsibility. Anything else, Jenna?
We have Aria.
Yeah, go ahead.
As we walk into our lives, I'm sorry, as we walk into and through our lives, we present ourselves with everything we need, the teachings, situations, people, to learn and to grow. If only we see and recognize them, there are so many levels and layers to this chapter, in particular that paragraph.
Very, 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 very good. I'm just going to edge us into the next paragraph because I think it begins to complete that thought. And I want to explore that particular, this next thought, maybe for the, we're getting a bit in more depth. The next paragraph says, this group intimacy is a professional necessity in the work because eventually the group will intentionally form a work partnership, which we call a circle of friends. So we've discussed this many times in this class. Do we have a group intimacy? Susan?
Yes.
Yeah,
we
sure
do.
We do.
Tianjo has mentioned it a number of times. He started pointing to it last year. A circle of friends. Now, there are two parts to that circle of friends. There are the individuals. I don't know who's on. I've heard that Hawk Lady, Aria, Jim H., Simon, Silverdale, Becky, Tianjo. So these are the individuals that come. Ivan's here. I'm here. Molly is here. Others are here. And those are the individuals that come. But there's a tangible something that occurs when there's a circle of friends. Another entity, dare I say, is formed at that point. At that point, if we allow ourselves to move into that fabric of intimacy born by the circle of friends, we allow ourselves to move into that fabric, suddenly, in a certain way, we are forced or able to look at ourselves from a whole different point of view, are we not? Are you not able right now to look at yourselves, to reflect on yourselves in a certain way? I am. It is different than your everyday, day in and day out life.
Mm-hmm.
We have a different perspective is given to us, is handed to us, because the circle of friends has come together, the group intimacy, and we allow it and perform in a professional manner when we come here. Nobody's on their own trip here. Go ahead, Susan. Anything else to be from the log? Okay, so this part of the chapter then, we've come to this sense of eternal recurrence and this act of accepting the obligation, which we're not done with, by the way. The act of accepting obligation, and then the teacher presenting something to us, and that something becomes actualized. when there is a group intimacy of professionals working together to hold together something called the circle of friends. When we do that, the entity that is there operates in a certain way. There's an invocation of that teacher. The invocation presents the teacher in itself. And if we come to this event with a particular form of professionalism, by which I mean attention and presence of the highest order, these are our friends in the work. And if we bring that together in this effort, then this fabric of reflection is allowed for us. So you go out on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and you're doing your thing, you can still recall this moment. You can still recall this moment and take it forth into that, into those venues, right?
Pianjo says, we seem to have passed through another note of this octave as the group just a few minutes ago. Or as Aria is agreeing, she felt it, and Hawk Lady.
Indeed. Here's a strange thing about, here's a secret magical thing. Okay? Everybody always talks about it. It's a secret. It's magical. But it's happening right now. And that right now is that when we allow ourselves to go into that space, open our hearts enough so we are exposed to it, and there's a certain pain involved with that surrender, we allow ourselves to move into that space, and then we reflect that we are in that space, it empowers the space more. It's self-generating. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's self-generating. So all I'm saying right now is let's acknowledge that. And in that acknowledgement, that's part of the skill called accepting the act of obligation. Yeah, that is the act, part of what is this thing called accepting the obligation. And moving ahead then, eventually, no matter where we begin, we must sooner or later arrive at Philadelphia. Naturally, after Philadelphia, all roads really are the same, and the journey never comes to an end, like we said earlier, Ivan.
Yes.
Of course, this idea does not refer to a specific city, but actually brotherly love, the love we have for one another. And this love, this is the love, the appreciation of the skill. We have some great players on this team, right? You know, Robert, I don't know if Sinhog is here. These are people that have really given a great deal. Dan, I don't know if he's here. And so these are, once we begin to see that we must eventually, no matter from where we begin our journey, pass through the city of brotherly love, after which all worlds are the same and the road goes ever on. And so can we express this sense of love for one another on this basis, this appreciation of this higher excellence that we're in right now with each other, and that when you begin to embrace it, and you do, and everybody that's on right now embraces it one second more, it feeds it, and it allows it to be there for us, and we can take a little chunk of this away to our day on Thursday and Friday and Sunday. Cool?
Mm-hmm.
What do you got there? Somebody must be jammering along.
Well, let's see. I can It was a very good question. Simon went back. He said his reference to taking the red pill was that that's when he took his obligation.
Okay.
The question then from Hawk Lady is, would there be many red pills in our lives as we move through it, or just one?
Yes, no, many, 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 many. Because we are always going to get challenges, and guess what, Hawk Lady? They become harder. The broader shoulders you have, the more you rip open that heart and are exposed to the infusion of grace that is allowed to you, then it's harder yet. And you're sitting there, and you go, oh, gosh, what should I do? What should I do? And you begin to learn what we are later going to be talking about in great depth. We learn Bardo habits, that when you're in that space, you naturally make the right move, like Ivan did, like Molly did. These were people that had huge challenges. And they remembered. And that skill set came forth. You've made some difficult challenges recently. Okay, go ahead, Susan.
Molly said it's the intention to offer hospitality.
Yeah, it's the intention to offer hospitality. That is the fundamental, one of the great fundamental things about human existence is the ability to offer and accept hospitality. That's the other part of it. Can you accept hospitality as well? That's fundamental to our existence. Go ahead.
Well, she just said for others and ourselves.
There you go.
And then Mark Roach said, wheresoever two or more are gathered in my name, there I am among them.
So you got it, Mark. So, and this comes from the New Testament. And if we are gathered in the name of the higher, then the teacher manifests. We are able to draw that down. And we maintain this space or this sense of professionalism we spoke about earlier. It's drawn down. We possess that. Not any individual, but together in the circle of friends, we possess the ability to invite, through hospitality, the teacher into the space.
He also said, in Halloween terms, earth, air, water, fire, in a circle we conspire.
Good.
Earth, air, water, fire.
It's a Halloween.
Yeah, this is the invocational night, for that matter.
I'm going to jump ahead just a bit because I have kind of what I think is a natural break in the chapter,
yeah.
And it's not on this page.
Yeah, okay.
In our present state, how could we understand the scope of the teacher's work? The answer is you can't. You can't. It's like, it's too broad. But you might be able to understand your work, and we can start to understand our work together here. Each of us as individuals is going through stuff. Silver Dale is going through his stuff, whatever that might be. Susan, Molly, everybody's going through things, their own crosses to bear. Later we can talk about how to surrender that into the group, but that's a little bit later, okay? If our work is successful, it is not into another world which we will return, but into again and again, into this world, the opportunity in the present to perfect our lives. Our life is our work. Our life is our work, Ivan.
Yeah, our life is our work.
Our life. Here it is. I'm the guardian angel of my biological machine. My life is my work. What am I painting? What story am I writing? What story am I writing? How can the teacher convince us to take a larger risk? What if we were brought to the doors behind which we could see for ourselves is the great domains of the absolute? What would we do if we were able to see and comprehend? So, and of course, you know, if we read the Divine Comedy, when Dante gets to Paradiso, they laugh at him and they say, look, there's just no way you can see us.
Mm-hmm.
You can't.
Yeah.
But we'll manifest like you, just so you can have something to write home about.
Mm-hmm.
But of course we can't, because we have to become different. But what it says to me is, how can we take on more risk? How can you right now, today, take on more risk? That, Pianjo, I think is part of what I wanted to explore. How can we take on more risk? How can you, in a work sense, put yourself in more of a risk position? Later, when we see more, we should understand the greater necessity. When we see something greater than ourselves, we become able to actually take the quantum leap out of our own personal suffering. And at the same time, as a group, become independently formed in preparation for the work. So in, as a group, we can do this. What is our eternal return to this life compared to the changeless endlessness of the absolute? My God. Whenever I read that sentence, my heart stops. Through the study of obligation, we will come to understand that the whole secret of real initiation is the acceptance of eternal return and the continual and endless perfection of this life. Anything else, Susan?
At the moment, no.
Okay. If our possible acceptance of obligation to the absolute is not presented, we must somehow learn to see opportunities for work and take them in our own initiative. Now, if our very lives are our work, then in the course of endlessly returning through our lives, we are expected to discover those areas in which the diamond is still rough, and study them, work on them somehow to grind away the imperfections. In that case, how long must we study our lives? Until we have changed something about ourselves. We are grinders then. We are gem perfectors. We are grinding wheels. And the power of that grinding wheel is this intimacy and this fabric that we invoke every time we have a group meeting like this. We can rely on that to give us perspective. Perfect. And then finally, we may return to this world again and again, but nothing in the outer world will change. The outcome will be the same. The machine will say the same thing, think the thoughts, feel the same, behave the same, and in the end, nothing will change. Yuck. And I'm reminded, Ivan, we are the hollow men. We are the empty, the stuffed men leaning together.
I have a question.
And then he ends his great, great poem, The Hollow Man, with, this is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but with a whimper. What then do we choose? What course do you choose? Because as Hawkwind is saying, every and many choices before us. So, what choice can we choose now? That's what is before us. I just thought that was like a good place to stop, probably because I remembered that poem and I wrote it down and I wanted to say it. Because that's what we have. We have this great, wonderful creativity of the inner life that we can choose, and this crafting of our life now, or this sameness of the dreary, we accept these things the same thing over and over again about ourselves, the same attitudes about ourselves. Or we make choices. So that's all I have for this evening. And we have a big meal to eat in the next half of this chapter. I encourage you to post anything, particularly this idea of how do I take the obligation. Now, the reason I wanted to stop right here, and we're going to take about 3 more minutes, but I wanted to remind Ivan of something he said after the last class. Do you remember what that is?
Yes, I do.
Good. Can you share that with us, please?
This goes along with what David has just been talking about, you know, about the circle of friends in this meeting this evening. I just thought that since we are working together in a circle, and we are this extended circle, using the internet here and all of this wonderful technology and so on, but, you know, we're sitting in an invocational circle, so why don't we dedicate a couple of minutes just to sit in silence and make an effort, let's say, whatever we consider to be an effort, a contemplation, a wish, and thinking about obligation or whatever, in regard to alleviating the suffering of the absolute. Because if it's something that we can do as a group,
let us so
do
it.
Why don't we embark on that? Yeah.
So we're going to do it for 2 minutes.
Yeah, we'll dedicate a couple of
We're going to dedicate 2 minutes from this work effort that we've made thus far, and we're going to dedicate it to this specific idea that Ivan is indicating. So let's bring that intention forth right now and sit in that intention. Sit quietly with focus on that intention. Don't necessarily put anything into the log. Just sit with that intention, and let's begin now. Okay, so that was that offering. So thank Ivan for bringing that thought for us. We're going to end on that note. Take this space, cherish it, and we'll see you again next week when we conclude the second half of Chapter 4, The Hidden Work by Ichigo. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.